The book of Jonah, which is a very short book, as you know, if you've ever read it. It's only four chapters long, and each chapter is relatively short in and of itself as far as verses are concerned. And last week's sermon was entitled, You Can Run, But You Can't Hide. And I asked the question because, again, what we're talking about here is that Jonah was running from God. And I asked the question last week, have you ever run from God? And I think I have. I think there have been times in my life that I've run from Him. Or the other question was, are you running now? Are you running now? And this morning, I kind of want us to get ourselves and kind of place ourselves in the life of Jonah as he's going through these various circumstances. And so let's kind of set this, the stage by going back and looking just for a moment, especially for those who were not able to be here last week. I mean, Jonah had tried to run. God is to go to Nineveh. Jonah was heading to Tarshish. He boarded a ship and he was on his way out. And God caused this great storm to build. And I mean, to such a point that the seamen who were used to being in, storms realized that this was one that there was no possibility that they were going to be able to survive. And they start throwing all of their cargo overboard. I mean, they are fearful. And then we find that finally Jonah, by the way, is down in the belly of the ship, isn't he? And he's asleep. I mean, all these guys are frantic. They've been calling out to their God. The captain comes down and tells him to get up and call on his God. And he doesn't know who, Jonah's God is. And so Jonah finally goes up and he begins to talk to the people. And they realize that he's running. And he tells them who his God is, that his God is the one who created the sea and the land, that his God is the Hebrew God. And they, of course, probably heard about this and, about who he was and what he had done for the Hebrews. And therefore, they knew he was powerful and mighty. And then Jonah said to them, the way to calm this storm and a way to save yourselves is to throw me overboard. And it says that they prayed, but they also tried to row. They heard what he said, they continued to try to row to shore until finally they realized that was impossible. And so they did as Jonah asked. They threw him overboard, and immediately the waters became calm and the wind still. And all of a sudden, a revival broke out on the ship. I mean, these people suddenly had come to faith that Jonah's God was the God. He wasn't one of these little forms and fashions of stone that they had seen or gold, but in fact, he was God. And they began to sacrifice to him and they made vows to him. But Jonah, on the other hand, he's sinking, isn't he? I mean, he is in the belly of the sea, and he is beginning to just go downward. And we think, and he thinks, I'm sure, that we've heard the last of him. But then God creates this great fish to swallow Jonah. Now, it would be enough, wouldn't it, for Jonah to be gotten rid of here? I mean, why go through all the trouble of creating a giant fish? And we don't know the details of how God did it. I mean, it's not difficult for God, is it? I mean, every other thing, he just spoke it into existence. Isn't that what Genesis 1:1 says? In the beginning, what? God created the heavens and the earth. He just spoke things into existence. And so it wasn't difficult for him to just speak these things into existence. And we know, as we look at it here, that there's a lot that we don't understand and know. But there's one detail that we do know, and that is that the Hebrew word for whale is not used here. It's not used here. And so if you have a problem with this account, then you miss the point. I was getting my hair cut. I've been getting my hair cut by the same lady for 15 years. And every time, she was a member of the church at Christ Church in Fleming Island when I was there. And so we talk about all kinds of things. We talk about politics. But we were talking, and I said, she says, well, what are you preaching on this Sunday? I said, well, I started on Jonah. And we were talking about how people look at, you know, at the story or the account of Jonah. And she said, you know, wasn't it, and I'm not sure whether she's right, but she said, wasn't it George Bush that said that he had read through the Bible so many times, and there were things that he accepted as fact, and then there were other things that he saw as only stories? And I said to her, well, how do you determine which is fact and which is story? You know, how are you going to come to grips with that? I mean, if you don't understand it, you don't like it, but we know that this account is true. As we said last week, Jesus talked about it, didn't he? He said, as Jonah was in the heart of the fish 3 days and three nights, the Son of Man will be in the heart of the earth for 3 days and three nights. And we said, if God says, or if Jesus says it, I believe it. And that settles it. I think he validated it. A man by the name of George Adam Smith wrote, he says, this is the tragedy of the book of Jonah, that a book that is made the means of one of the most sublime revelations of truth in the Old Testament should be known to most only, or to be known to most only for its connection with a whale. Now, he puts the whale in there, and we've already said it was not a whale. John Cullenberger said, it is as foolish for the liberal to deny the possibility of taking the fish literally as for the conservative to attempt to identify the species of marine animal that could swallow and sustain a human being for 3 days and three nights. Both slight the miraculous and power of God. What Jehovah did to save Jonah is not normal. Nor are the other divinely engineered encounters in the book. I mean, storms at sea are commonplace, but not storms that rise and fall instantaneously. Plants sprout and grow, but not overnight. Worms eat and destroy vegetation, but not within a morning. Great fish devour people, but do not sustain them and disgorge them alive on the shore. You see, what they're saying here is that the hardest thing to believe about this account is not the fish. The hardest thing they're saying to believe is that God would still care about this disobedient servant and therefore provide this fish. Now, understand something. 3 days and three nights in the belly of this great fish was not a panacea, was it? I mean, if you look at it, it was probably cramped, it was probably dark, it was probably stinky, you know, it was probably absolutely nauseating. For us old people, you know, do you remember back in the days of the outhouse? You know, some of you do, some of you don't. You've always had that inside plumbing, and it's been nice for you, but I remember visiting my uncle, and I'll tell you what, the inside of that fish must have smelled like that outhouse. I mean, that's not a nice odor. Now, I realize we got portalettes today, but they clean those, they drain them, and they deodorize them as they put them out there. But, you know, we'd be yelling, and I'm sure he might have thought, if it was in existence at that time, where's the Febreze? You know, I need to change some of the odor in this place. But he was not sitting at a desk with a light on it, as some people have pictured him. I mean, we don't know how he breathed, and so it's miraculous, is it not, that he even survived? But you see, of course, all things are possible with God, right? And that was God's intent. And at least briefly, Jonah was conscious in the fish long enough to realize that God had saved him from drowning in the sea. And during those times, Jonah prayed. Someone said, the belly of a fish is not a happy place to live, but it's a great place to learn. And inside the fish, Jonah prayed. And in his prayer, he recounts what had taken place, not while he was in the fish, but while he was in the sea. And the water, and you know, we can see here is the threat of death, and the fish is the refuge of salvation. I mean, it's very probable that when he was in the sea, that he probably thought, it's over. You know, this is the end of me. I'm not going to make it out of this situation. Now, how would you feel? I think you'd feel the same way. Verses 1 and 2 says, from inside the fish, Jonah prayed to the Lord his God. He said, in my distress, I called to the Lord, and he answered me. Now, there's a simple way, of summing up what happened when Jonah sank into the water. And when he cried out, he says he called out to God. God heard him. God answered him by sending a fish. And folks, this ought to be an encouragement to every one of us here today. I mean, we see here that God answers his children's cry as they cry out in distress. And he does that regardless of our guilt. I mean, Jonah was disobedient, was he? I mean, he was going the complete opposite direction of what God wanted him to do. He was not headed toward Nineveh. He was heading toward Tarshish. And we find that he was thrown overboard. I mean, he's running from God. He's guilty of disobedience. And that, again, is the reason for the storm, the lost cargo, and finally him being thrown overboard. And folks, as we draw this back to us, I mean, there may be someone here today who is going through a lot of distress because of disobedience. And if you are, then I want you to see there's hope. I think that's what this story tells us. That's what this account gives us. I mean, will God have mercy on me and hear my cry in my times of distress? Well, folks, take heart. Take heart from Jonah. I mean, his distress was the most difficult that you can think of. But again, it was all based upon his guilt, wasn't it? It's what he had done. Not simply that God was punishing him for nothing. It was because he was disobedient. But God heard his cry, and God gave him a second chance. And that's the way God is with us, isn't it? Another example of this is found in Psalm 107, verses 10 through 15. It says, some sat in darkness, in utter darkness, prisoners suffering in iron chains because they rebelled against God's commands and despised the plans of the Most High. So he subjected them to bitter labor. They stumbled, and there was no one to help. Then they cried out to the Lord in their trouble, and he saved them from their distress. He brought them out of darkness, the utter darkness, and broke away their chains. Let them give thanks to the Lord for his unfailing love and his wonderful deeds for mankind. And so if your disobedience has caused your distress, then what you need to do is repent, and you need to call out to the Lord, and he will answer in spite of your guilt. And then he'll also answer regardless of his judgment. Verse 3, he says, you hurled me into the depth. Now, in chapter 1, verse 15, it says, naturally, that the seamen had thrown him overboard. But what Jonah is saying here is this what God wanted done. I mean, this was the answer to saving these others. And so God was angry with Jonah's disobedience, and he was going to rebuke him. And nothing makes us despair more in our distress than the thought that God is angry with us. And that he's brought us into that situation because he is angry with us. And we may think in these circumstances that God put me here because he's angry with me, and therefore, what's the use of praying? I mean, what's the use of calling out to him? But Jonah prayed for deliverance. And the very God who threw him into the sea heard him and performed a miracle to save him. And so even when God is displeased with us, he never brings us into these times of distress just to punish us. Just to punish us. Instead, he brings us to those times for the purpose of redeeming us. Redeeming us. Job 36:15 says, "But those who suffer, he delivers in their suffering. He speaks to them in their affliction." I mean, adversity is redemptive, not just punishment. And if you felt as though the very hand of God is against you in your distress, I mean, do not hesitate. Do not, you know, refrain from praying. You pray even harder. I mean, he answers his children in spite of his judgment and also in impossible circumstances. Verses 5 and 6. "The engulfing waters threatened me. The deep surrounded me. Seaweed was wrapped around my head. To the roots of the mountains I sank down. The earth beneath barred me in forever." Can you imagine falling overboard at sea in the midst of calm waters? And naturally, normally, you know, you've heard people fall overboard at cruise, off of cruise liners and off of aircraft carriers and various things. And oftentimes no one knows, or they call overboard and they rescue the individual. But in calm waters, but here again, he's been thrown overboard and the winds are howling and the waves are 20 to 30 feet and he's sinking. And he's sinking deeper and deeper and deeper. And again, you know that you just can't survive this. And that not being enough, he says the seaweed began to wrap around his head and his neck. And I think this would be terrifying, don't you? I think it'd be terrifying. I mean, drowning is a terrible way to die. And yet God lets the circumstances seem almost insurmountable before he delivers for Jonah. And I don't know why it is, but it seems that in the Christian life, distresses and troubles come in bunches, in batches, don't they? They seem to come all at once. You know, it used to be someone would say, this happened, and therefore two more things are going to happen. You know, everything happens in threes. Everything happens in batches. And, you know, they don't get spaced out in proportion to our powers and our ability to cope with them. And often they develop to the point where, you know, you just can't see any way out. But we need to remember Jonah's plight. I mean, it was impossible, wasn't it? I mean, it is impossible. I mean, I don't know whether you've ever been scuba diving or anything like that. But, I mean, when he talks about it, he says, you know, he went into the sea and he went down to, in essence, the roots of the mountains. Well, having been a scuba diver, I mean, the pressures begin to build the deeper you go. And, I mean, used to hear years and years ago about submarines when they would go down and they weren't as strong as, you know, they are today. And as they were sinking down in there, they would go past the depth, you know, trying to get away from the enemy. They would sink and sit on the bottom, and they could hear things beginning to crush in. And the water in the various valves would begin to leak. And so as we look at it there, we understand that he's talking about, it's an impossible situation for him. But nothing's impossible with God, is it? In Mark 10:27, Jesus looked at them and said, "With man this is impossible, but not with God. All things are possible with God." And folks, when you and I cry out to the Lord in our distress, he answers us and delivers us from impossible situations. God is the God of impossible. Remember that. And then he does it just in time. Verse 7 says, When my life was ebbing away, I remembered you, Lord, and my prayer rose to you, to your holy temple. Another way of saying this is, as I was losing consciousness, I remembered the Lord. And Jonah was still praying without any answer, probably before he blacked out. And he may have blacked out, you know, and then suddenly later he awakens and finds that he has been spared in the belly of this giant fish. And God often answers prayers in the 11th hour. Many Christians have cried out like Habakkuk. It says, "How long, Lord, must I call for help, but you do not listen, or cry out to you violence, but you do not save?" But Jonah gives us courage to be unrelenting in our prayers, to keep on crying out to God, even when we think things are past being able to be solved, thinking that there is no use of continuing to pray, but we need to believe that God will answer just in time, and that being his time. And then God answers our distresses in stages. I mean, God answers our cries of distress in stages, and not you know, all of which are comfortable. I mean, we must not think that it's all or nothing at all, nothing at all in His giving to us, in His answers. I mean, we can be fairly certain that when Jonah cried out, he didn't say, "God, put me in the belly of a giant fish for 3 days and three nights." I don't think he said that. I mean, he probably said, "God, save me. I've been cast out of your presence. You know, have mercy on me, O Lord." But God answers in stages. The belly of the fish hardly seems like salvation, does it? But it is. I mean, Jonah is given enough consciousness to realize that he's been spared from drowning, that he has hope. And he doesn't complain about his surroundings. He doesn't complain that it's stinky and cramped and dark, you know. He's just happy that he's alive. And he accepts God's first stage of salvation as a guarantee that something better is coming. That dry land is coming. And so he concludes his prayer in the belly of the fish with a great statement. He says, "Salvation comes from the Lord." And so the final point I want you to see this morning is that God shows what loyalty to him can do. Verses 8 and 9. It says, "Those who cling to worthless idols turn away from God's love for them. But I, with shouts of grateful praise, will sacrifice to you. What I have vowed, I will make good. I will say, salvation comes from the Lord." So God answers Jonah's prayer, and it produces a proper response. And what is that response? It filled Jonah with praise and wonder and thanksgiving. And really a thought of how could anybody turn from the Lord to worthless idols? And God had taught him to leave the Lord is to leave his mercy. And you never want to do that, do you? You never want to leave the Lord. You need the mercy of God. You need it. And what God has done for him brings praise from Jonah. Folks, God answers prayers for our good. And that naturally should result, should it not, in our praising, in our worshiping, in our giving thanksgiving to him? And it's said that people who have the spirit of thanksgiving are the best candidates for answered prayer. Philippians 4:6 says, "Do not be anxious about anything, but in every situation, by prayer and petition with thanksgiving, present your requests to God." And Paul wrote in 2 Corinthians 1:11, he says, "As you help us by your prayers, then many will give thanks on our behalf for the gracious favor granted us in answer to the prayers of many." And Psalm 50:15 says, "And call on me in the day of trouble, and I will deliver you, and you will honor me. So God answers us in our distress, and we are to be loyal to him, and we're to be filled with praise. Aren't you thankful that he sent Jesus Christ? I mean, even though that's what we celebrate every Sunday here. I mean, I think every morning that we wake up, we ought to realize that we have been saved. And that being saved did not just bring forth joy and gratitude and thanksgiving in our hearts for him. Well, as we close today, I want you to realize you do not want to rely on your own strength and wisdom. Don't try that. Instead, trust in God. Trust in God. Take the difficulties of your life and realize that life, that you can turn it over to him, and that God will help you work these things out in his time, and that he allows us to have these times of difficulty in order to strengthen our faith. And again, it should result in praise and thanksgiving. And so whatever your stresses or difficulties are that you're facing today, take them to him in faith, and then wait on him as you continue to pray to him and seek his guidance, seek his face, and seek his strength. Remember that passage of scripture in Isaiah 40:31, those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They shall soar on wings of like eagles. They shall run and not grow weary. And they will walk and not faint. So it's trust in the Lord. Jonah found that out, didn't he? Jonah discovered that in a mighty way. I mean, he went from the depths of being lost and depressed and everything being over as far as he was concerned to being able to go back and being able to do what God wanted him to do. And the same things with us. Folks, you're not in this by yourself, are you? One, if you're a member of this congregation, we're in it together with you. We want to help you. But also, God is right there by your side. He's in you. The Holy Spirit indwells you. And therefore, you need to trust God as Jonah did, and find that God loved him and saved him. If you've not been saved, if you've not given your life to Jesus Christ, that's where it all starts, isn't it? Coming to Christ, having God in your life, and then allowing him to work in you and for you as you trust in him. So if you've got a decision to make, why don't you make it as we stand and sing?